The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I loved reading as a kid and devoured books growing up. A healthy diet of reading soon got me interested in writing, and the stories I loved the most were from the horror genre. Authors like Poe, Lovecraft, and Hitchcock, to more contemporary writers like King, Straub, and Kuntz. I dabbled in some short stories, but never really submitted or published. I guess I lacked the confidence. That changed one day, after a local author, Jeremiah Preston, delivered a short lecture on writing at my high school. After the session, Mason, my best friend, kept nagging me to let Preston look at a couple pieces I'd brought along. I got to within 6 feet of the author before I blanched and was about to beat a hasty retreat when Mason opened his big mouth. "Mr. Preston, Mr. Preston!" The author looked up from signing a book to our language teacher. "My friend here is quite the aspiring writer himself and was wondering if you could look at some of his work." I turned blue, and I swore I would punch Mason when I heard Preston say, "Sure." By the time I turned, he was already standing in front of us, medium build and wearing a brown blazer, at no tie. He had a wide smile on his tanned face and short blonde hair. Maybe if he had just ignored us that day, things would have gone differently. But if wishes were horses. He was very encouraging. Preston said he thought I had potential. He urged me to take risks and to put my work out there, recommending some online sites. By the time I got home, I couldn't wait to get started. I had quite a few short stories in my archive, Blood Camp, Grim Tales, The Ghost in the Hedge, but they were fluff, not good enough to post. I had to create something new, something unique. My parents had migrated to New York from a small island in the Caribbean when I was just a baby. Now that I'm 16, most of my knowledge of the place came from the stories they would tell my little sister and I. Caribbean folklore was full of colorful and terrifying characters, and whenever my grandparents visited, Grandpa Mike would always regale us with scary stories he swore were true, and to be honest, as a kid I was terrified. It was from these stories I decided to draw my inspiration and set out to do research like any good author. After school the next day, Mason and I headed over to a Haitian craft shop I knew about that was not too far from the school. We both rode bikes, and the detour wouldn't sidetrack us too much. The shop was in an old strip mall and had flags from various Caribbean countries hanging out front. There were also some wicker products displayed in the window, and as we pushed open the front door, a pungent scent assaulted us. The inside was a bit dark and filled with all sorts of paraphernalia. Red and white candles were lit. The keen aroma came from a shelf to the left, exhibiting bags of roasted cumin, turmeric, ginger, nutmeg, and various blends of spices. A small bell had rung when he pushed open the door, and it now brought a short, heavy-set woman to the front. She wore a colorful dress with equally colorful head tie. "Good afternoon, young fellas. And what is it Merle can help you with today?" She had a thick, sing-song accent. I told her I was doing a school project on Caribbean folklore and wanted to know if she could help me with any background literature or information. Something unique that you would not find from simple online searches. Merle tilted her head to the left and stood, arms akimbo, a bit uncertain. But when I told her my parents were from Trinidad, she relaxed a bit. "Well, I never. You young fellas come here to ask me about Jumbie," she said before chuckling deeply. "Well, I think old Merle can help with you, young man." Merle was born in Port-au-Prince and told us a story which she swore was true, and when she was a kid still living in Haiti. She remembers there were two prominent families in the area always competing with each other until one day, the patriarch of one of the families, Mr. Jean, sought the counsel of an Obeah man. This was a sort of witch doctor who dealt in arcane and supernatural matters. According to local legend, the witch doctor summoned a magical spirit, which he called a Bako. This particular Bako was a short, childlike creature with an oversized stomach, tiny sharp teeth, and long claws, and had been trapped in a bottle the witch doctor procured some years earlier while traveling to British Guiana. The Bako was often naked and had very dark skin and red eyes. The creature would use its magical powers to help its owner gain wealth. However, there was a price, and it could sometimes be a high one. Traditionally, Bako fed on milk and bananas, but their tastes could become more radical. The family who had allegedly summoned the spirit started enjoying incredible success in all of their business dealings, and soon became very wealthy. This, of course, incurred the jealousy and wrath of Jean's competitor, who confronted him in front of the town residents during a busy market day, insulting him and hurling accusations of practicing witchcraft at his family. Mr. Jean never responded, however, and 2 days later his accuser was found dead in a small ravine that ran alongside town. His throat had been slashed open, and he had bled to death. There were bite marks on his face, neck, arms, and legs that looked disconcertingly human, like he had been attacked by an angry child. Following this incident, the witch doctor had trapped the entity in the bottle once more, and no one spoke openly about it, but all believed the Bako was responsible for the murder. Sometime after that, Merle and her parents left for America. She filled in a few other details for which I was extremely grateful, and even though she insisted her experiences were real, Mason and I just looked at each other and smiled. I think we may have touched a nerve because she stood up from the small table we were all sitting around at this point and said, in a voice a bit higher than normal, "Well, it is true. I can prove it too, you know, because that Obeah man was my uncle." "What?" I asked. Merle hastened toward the back of the store, returning a few minutes later with a small, short-necked bottle. It was a nasty-looking thing, brown with dark, muddy stains all around it. There was a wooden cork stuffed into the opening, and a small bit of paper was secured around the neck of the bottle. "What on earth is that?" I asked. This is what my uncle used to trap that wicked spirit. Inside this bottle, young fellas, dwells the spirit of a Bako. The small bit of paper, Merle warned us, carried the spell that was used to call forth the entity. I pushed my chair away from the table. "Well, Merle, you know what? Thank you so much, but we have to be going. It's getting a bit late." There was a tremor in my voice as I stared at the bottle on the table. Maybe Merle didn't quite have all her marbles after all. Mason looked at me and squinted, silently mouthing, "What the hell, dude?" At that same time, the bell over the door rang, and a couple walked into the store. "Good afternoon. Anyone here?" Merle quickly got up and went over to attend to them. As soon as she was gone, Mason slipped the bottle into his backpack. "What the hell, man?" I said. "You can't take that." "Shut up and walk. Jeez, don't tell me you believe that childish nonsense." He was already halfway to the door, and all I could do was follow him. "Thank you again, Merle," I called as we exited. She looked up and nodded briefly before going back to her customers. On the ride back, I again berated Mason for taking the bottle. but he only laughed and called me names, insisting he'd only borrowed it. When we got home, he said he'd be over later to try the spell.
What?
I asked. Oh, come on. Mason seemed a bit flustered now.
If you want to write a really good story, then this is your chance. Hey, you never know.
He laughed and rode into his yard across from ours. I shook my head and went inside. It was about 6 when Mason came over, and the sun had just started to go down. My bedroom was upstairs, and I could see the street from my front window. But Mason never needed an invitation. We had been neighbors since we were toddlers, and he walked right into my bedroom, shutting the door behind him.
Hey, chicken. Told the folks we had a project to finish together, he said, and dropped his backpack on my bed. You ready, sucker?
And he laughed again. He pulled out the small bottle he had borrowed from Merle.
Come on, dude, let's do this,
he said, excitedly, and dragged me over to the bed.
I'm not sure about this, Mason, I said nervously. Oh, put a sock in it, dude. Come on, here's the spell.
Mason opened up the paper, which was rolled into a tight cylindrical shape. Even our teenaged eyes strained a bit to make out what was written. It was in blood red, of course, and was in a strange language. In fact, it was more gibberish than an actual language.
You ready?
And then Mason yanked the cork from the bottle. He struggled a bit at first, but it came free. A nasty odor came from it, making us both gag.
Oh shit, dude, open a window.
As the cool breeze cleared the air a bit, we picked up the paper and started chanting what was on it.
Orca fi gruja. Orca fi bruja.
After about 10 minutes of continuous chanting, I stood up. This is stupid, Mason. Aside from the foul smell, the bottle was empty. For all we know, Merle is probably having a good laugh at us right now. Mason shrugged, but at that very moment, there came a scraping sound from under the bed. We looked at each other wide-eyed.
What the?
Mason mouthed in his silent way again. And then out loud,
You heard that, dude?
I nodded. Mason jumped off the bed, and before I knew what he was doing, he yanked up the sheet and was peering under the bed. There was nothing, except for my shoes. Just then, the bedroom door flew open, making us both jump.
What the hell, Summer? How many times have I told you to knock when the door's closed? Get out of here!
I shouted after my sister, who now stood in the doorway.
But I heard you guys talk. Who's your friend?
Duh, it's Mason.
The one under the bed, dummy.
Get out of here, Summer.
Fine, then don't tell me.
She shouted and slammed the door shut. That was probably the most exciting thing that happened all evening. A half hour later, we resorted to playing video games. After we had finished, Mason put the cork back into the bottle, replaced the bit of paper, and left for home.
Well, that was a big bust, he said regretfully.
As it turned out, we did have a school project to finish. So it wasn't until 2 days later that I finally had a chance to write my story. I made notes, included those from Merle, and laid out a skeleton plot complete with characters, dictionary, and thesaurus on hand. I was ready. Except that my mind was completely blank. I stared numerous times before deleting what I wrote. I even got to about 3 paragraphs once before deciding it was junk. 2 hours later, I was still staring at a blank Word document.
Damn it,
I thought, and slammed both fists on my desk.
What's the matter with me? Why can't I do this?
I felt like crying. If only I could get that first line.
Do you wish it?
What was that?
Hell, now I'm hearing things, I thought. The voice still resonated in my head, and I put it down to frustration from my writer's block.
Do you wish to clear the block?
I turned around sharply, even though I knew no one was there. Hell, it was just a voice, a
born from my overactive but apparently useless imagination. Oh boy, I've finally driven myself mad and laughed out loud at the thought. It was just what I needed. Oh, what the heck, I figured. Yes, I wish to have no more writer's block, I said to thin air.
Granted.
It boomed in my head once more, like Aladdin's genie, I thought, and giggled again. But suddenly, I had it. It was there all along, right in front of me. All I had to do was reach out and grab it. My opening line, and it was perfect. One line led to another, which then followed into a paragraph, and then a page. It took me less than an hour to finish my story. All 2,500 words. And I knew in my heart that this was a good story. I proofread for errors, but I had a confidence I'd never felt before, and within 30 minutes of typing the last full stop, it was uploaded onto one of those popular forums where people post creepy stories and hope to get noticed. I wanted to act cool, but honestly, I kept checking the site every couple of minutes to see if anyone had read it and if anyone had commented on it. By the time my mother knocked on the door to make sure I was in bed, over 100 people had seen the story, and there were at least 10 comments. I looked at the ceiling for a long time before I drifted off to sleep. I was awake even before my alarm went off and made a beeline for the computer. Over 400 views, and dozens more comments, including one guy who wanted to narrate it for his YouTube channel. It was a hit. This was a dream come true. I could not believe it. Thank you, oh genie in my head, I thought, and got ready for school. I showed Mason the site when we got to school, and being who he was, he had half the school reading the story by lunch. People who had never paid me attention before came up to me and patted me on the shoulder, telling me what a great job I'd done. Even Jennifer Coulson smiled at me. I had died and gone to heaven. When I got home from school, Mason and I ran up to my room and logged onto the site to find over 1,500 people had read the story, and there were scores, maybe even hundreds of comments from people who thought it was a great piece of writing. Mason, who was bigger than I, grabbed me in a bear hug and started kissing my cheeks. My hero, he teased. Oh, get off, you oaf. I barked, but joined him in laughing. Mason stayed for supper, and Mom was just washing up when she asked me to take the trash out. Well, that's my cue, Mason said, adding, so long, Stephen King, and laughed. I walked out front with him and saw him run across the street and into his house. We had a backyard which my mother dotted over. There was a small garden and even a couple fruit trees. A darkness had fallen when I dragged the garbage bag through the back door. My peripheral vision suddenly registered movement from under the tree at the far corner. I stopped and peered into the darkness, which the motion sensor lights could not quite dispel. Nothing. I shrugged and took the bag around to the trash can at the side of the house. I was walking back when I saw movement towards the back of the yard. Whoever it was fast and short. I wondered if it might be young Sam Johnson from two houses down, but what the heck would he be doing in my backyard at this hour? I walked to the back of the house. Hello? I repeated myself. I was just about to walk inside when I heard a low whistle, followed by what I could only describe as a cackle. Who's there? A few seconds later, something answered me.
A riddle, a riddle, a ree. A wish I granted thee. Story, good and fine. Now give me what is mine.
Whatever it was, spoke in a grating whisper with a melodic ring, like the leprechauns you see in some of those B-rated movies. I was still reeling from what was happening when red eyes peered out from behind one of the fruit trees. I screamed and bolted into the house, almost colliding with my mother. Alexander Jones, what on earth are you doing? She grabbed me by the shoulders. Are you and Mason still fooling around out there?
Mason, go on home, right now.
I knew Mason was already home, and yet I heard Mason's voice answer her.
Good night, Miss Jones. Good night, Mason.
My knees almost gave out from under me, and I held on to my mother.
Alex, get cleaned up. Is your homework finished?
I had no voice. I just nodded and ran upstairs, locking the door behind me. I sat on the bed for about 10 minutes, my mind a swirling confusion of what I just experienced, when I saw lights go on in the bedroom of the house across the street. I dialed.
Hello?
Before Mason could say another word, I was into him.
What the hell have you done, Mason? What the hell have you done?
Whoa, buddy, get a grip.
It's here, Mason, it's here. I saw it in the backyard. It spoke to me, Mason. We really summoned something. You idiot, Mason. What am I going to do?
I felt tears running down my cheeks. I was losing it, and if I didn't get my voice under control, my parents would hear.
You're shitting me. Oh, crap. We did it, man. We did it.
This isn't great, Mason. And it's not funny. That thing, suppose it comes to my house.
Look, man, if Merle was right, then you're the boss. So you just keep control of it, man.
It's easy for you to say from across the road, you jackass.
I hung up. I've never been so terrified in my life. Mason called back, but I ignored it. I turned down the overhead light and crept slowly to the window, overlooking the front yard and the street. I saw nothing. I lay in bed for hours, sleep eluding me. Every creak from the floorboards outside my room would send me into a panic. At some point, I must have dozed off. I was walking through a dense forest. It was humid and hot. There were tall trees overgrown with vines and thick brush underneath. I looked around. The jungle extended as far as I could see. There was a strong smell of wet dirt and rotting vegetation. Strangely, there was no sound, but no animals. I heard a rustle behind and turned around, and there it was. Just 10 feet from me. It was just like Merle had described. About 2.5 feet tall, black leathery skin, and was naked. Its tiny manhood barely visible under an overhanging stomach with a large navel. The feet were way too big, and the mouth seemed squashed into the face, with red lips barely covering 2 rows of sharp-looking teeth. I saw a pig-like nose, and eyes like large white orbs, except for the 2 tiny pits of fire at their center.
"If it isn't Alex Jones,"
it said in a raspy voice with that sing-song melody.
"What do you want?"
"A good question, Mr. Jones. A fine question. A fair day's pay for a fair day's work, I say. That's the way it goes."
It clapped, and I saw barb-like talons at the end of its long, bony fingers.
"What do you want?"
I repeated.
"What's this?"
It took a step closer.
"You called for me and I came. You made a wish and it was granted. A debt is due, and the debt must be paid. I'm hungry, boy, and I want what is due."
I don't know what that is.
It peered at me with those red eyes.
"Milk and blood, boy. Bring me milk and blood."
Then suddenly it was standing right in front of me, baring those teeth.
"Now."
I fled. Branches slammed into my face, leaving bloody scratches. And still I heard it shouting behind me.
"Give it or I'll take it. Give it or I'll take it, boy."
I sat up in bed, panting. I looked at the clock. It was just past midnight. I shook my head to try and clear the nightmare. It was a nightmare after all. It had to be. I must have just imagined all of it. But just then what sounded like every dog on the street started howling like crazy. Crept to the front window and peeped over the ledge. Was that something childlike standing in the shadows? I gasped and fell on the floor. This couldn't be real. I chanced another look outside. There was nothing there, and I comforted myself, thinking that my imagination was getting the best of me. I fell asleep on the floor at some point and dreamt I was drowning in a giant bowl full of bloody milk. A sharp knock to my door brought me to my senses. "Time to get up, kiddo." It was Dad. The sun was already creeping over the horizon. I was aching all over as I showered and finally dressed. I came down to find my dad sitting at the kitchen table, sipping coffee. Summer was already halfway through breakfast. I pulled up a chair, thankful that last night's events didn't seem as terrifying now that daylight had calmed the world once more. "Mom's not down yet?" I asked with a mouthful of bacon and eggs. "Don't eat and talk." Just then we heard Mom shuffle down the stairs. She moved slowly as if she was tired. She pulled up a chair and sat at the table.
"Oh my God, Donna."
It was Dad. "Are you feeling okay?" Mom looked pale, and her eyes were bloodshot with dark circles around them.
"Just bad dreams. I kept having this stupid nightmare about being chased through a forest."
I almost choked.
"Heck, if I don't feel like I've been running all night."
She rested her head on her arms, which were folded on the table in front of her. I turned to see my dad looking at something on my mother's shoulder where her robe had slid down.
"What the hell is that, babe?"
he exclaimed. Mom had an apple-sized laceration on her shoulder, just beneath her left ear. There were blotches of dried blood around it, and it had started to turn purple in some places. But that wasn't the worst of it. The worst came when I looked closer, because it was then that I saw the punctures. Punctures that seemed to have been made by numerous sharp little teeth. The life of an animator can be a dull one. However, I don't hate it. In fact, I love it. I've never had great social skills, and for my whole life, I've found that I would much rather stay at home and refine my art skills than go to a party packed with people and talk all night with people I don't even know. Since I've spent my whole 34 years of life creating art and animations as an adult, it's been rather easy finding jobs in the industry. Normally, when I get a gig, I'll go to studios where I work for however long I've been hired for. When the project is done, I go back home and begin the process of reaching out to big studios and convincing them to let me work with them. One of my most recent jobs had ended. I prepared to pack up and head home. The area I was working in provided most of my equipment for me, but I still had to pack up my enormous pen display. Transporting a 32-inch monitor is no easy task, and by the time I was finished carrying it to my car, all I could really think about is going home and eating an early dinner. However, I knew I couldn't do that. I'd been working on a short animated film every night before I ate dinner, and on evenings like this, this commitment can be a real pain in the neck. Most animators make short films to showcase to large studios in hopes of getting hired there. The idea is, give the business a taste of your work and they'll be all over it. I challenged myself to work on my short film for at least half an hour every day. I know that half an hour isn't much in terms of animation, but over time it adds up. Already I was over halfway done with my project. I pulled into my driveway and got to work, moving my humongous drawing monitor into my home office, or art studio as I like to call it. My office is quite small, and barely has enough room to hold me, my pen display, and my computer. I struggled settling everything back in, and at this point I really didn't want to get to work on my film. It was 10:30 p.m., I knew that I would be busy for the next couple of days and that I wouldn't be able to work on my short film much. I decided to eat dinner first and then decide. I'm a procrastinator, I know. After a luxurious dinner of ramen and Dr. Pepper, I had to make my decision. Would I spend the next half hour animating or go right to bed? I chose to work on my short film. If I could at least get something done, I'd be happy. I sat down at my desk and booted up my computer. I set a timer for 30 minutes and began to draw. I was making good progress for the first 10 minutes, but then the stylus began to feel heavy in my hands. The lines I was drawing were becoming sloppy. At times I could barely keep my eyes open. I had woken up at 5 in the morning to make it to work on time. And now it was 11:15 at night. I was exhausted. I struggled to keep my eyes open. I dropped my pen onto the floor and fell back into my chair. By now I realized I should have just gone to bed, but now I felt too tired to even stand up and walk to my bedroom. I slowly began to doze off. That's when I heard it. I was almost asleep, but I could still tell that I truly heard what I heard. An owl. I'd seen documentaries and read books about them, but since I live in a large city, I'd never heard one. That's strange, I thought as I drifted off into sleep. The next morning, I awoke to the sound of the garbage trucks outside my apartment. It took me a few moments to register where I was. I had fallen asleep in my office chair, and my neck felt sore from being in such an awkward position all night. I groaned and sat up. I had left my pen display on all night. I turned it off and prepared myself for the day to come. My brother had tickets to a football game in our town, and he was picking me up in an hour. I closed the window, got dressed, brushed my teeth, and ate breakfast, and even managed to squeeze in a few minutes of animation before my brother came. But we had a blast. We saw the football game, ate a huge dinner at some expensive buffet, and even dropped by a party for a few minutes. I guess it's good to get out of your comfort zone sometimes, even if it's to the dismay of your antisocial personality. Anyway, I got home at around 11:15 at night. I bade goodbye to my brother and stumbled blindly towards my room. I felt my way around my house, finding my way to my bed. I collapsed on it, exhausted after another late night. As I lay in bed, I heard it yet again. This time, I was slightly more awake than last time. I was still extremely tired, but I was able to wonder why I was hearing an owl. I live in an apartment complex on the 4th floor, and my city's jammed full of streetlights and skyscrapers. I rarely even see normal birds, much less owls. I heard it once more. I climbed slowly out of bed, determined to catch a glimpse of this mysterious owl. I silently opened the curtains and peeked out. I didn't see anything. The sound of the owl's hooting seemed to be coming from the right. I opened my window just slightly and leaned out. After looking around, I gave up and closed the window. I submitted myself to sleep. The next morning, I woke up and noticed that my window was open. I knew that I had closed it the night before. A sudden thought ran through my head. I had left my window unlocked. Did someone break in? No. There was no way that someone would climb all the way up to the 4th floor. There wasn't a fire escape on that side of the building, so they would have had to scale the pipes. No, I must have just left it open and forgot in my sleepy state. I sat down at my desk and checked my emails. There was only one new email, and it made me ecstatic. I had just gotten a new job at a huge animation studio that I had been longing to be hired at for months. I would be working there for the next 6 weeks. To celebrate, that night, I went to go get pizza at one of the many local pizza parlors. I ordered a large pepperoni and ate it in the restaurant. After I was finished, I received a call from the hospital. My sister had just given birth to a beautiful baby girl, and she wanted me to visit my new niece. I ran to the hospital, and when I got there, I found that my parents and my brother were already there. We celebrated the birth of my sister's daughter, Maria. My parents left at around 9:30, and my brother had to go at 10:15, but I visited with my sister and her husband far longer. I didn't have to go to work until the day after tomorrow, so I relished the opportunity to stay up late without any serious repercussions. In fact, I stayed until 11:15. I didn't know how it was possible, but again, I heard the owl.
Riley, did you hear that?
I asked my sister.
It sounded like an owl. No, Ethan, she replied. I don't think I've ever even seen an owl. I've been hearing them every night, I explained. Right outside my window at 11:15. I thought the owls were just nesting outside my apartment, but I heard it here, too. Maybe it's the way the wind is blowing.
My sister responded.
There aren't a whole lot of owls in this city.
Yeah, you're right, I said. It's probably just the wind. The following night, I was proven wrong. I'd spent almost the whole day animating my short film. I had made some great progress and decided to grab some dinner before going to bed. I swung by a burger place and ordered to go. My plan was to watch some television before falling asleep. My first day of work at the new studio was tomorrow, and I needed some sleep. I would just watch one episode of the show I was currently watching, then head to sleep. Unfortunately, you know how it is. At the end of each episode, you say, "I have time for one more." And by the time you finally check the time, you realize you've watched 6 episodes and that you have work tomorrow. I stood up and made my way towards my bedroom. As I was falling onto my bed, I heard the now familiar hooting of the owl. Except this time, it was coming from inside my apartment. "It's just the wind," I told myself. I heard it again. No, I recognized that sound from those documentaries I'd watched. There was the sound of an owl hooting, and it was unmistakably coming from somewhere in my apartment. I climbed out of my bed. I followed the sound out to my bedroom. I traced the noise into the hallway. I was led straight into my office. I opened the door. I saw for an instant a pair of red eyes, and then they vanished. Owls don't have red eyes, do they? I closed the door back and entered my room again. I'd deal with it in the morning. For now, I just closed my door and locked it. Morning came. As soon as I opened my eyes, I remembered my dilemma and decided to do something about it. I exited my room cautiously, holding a baseball bat. I wasn't planning on hurting anything, just scaring it off. The silence was unsettling. Just my footsteps as I entered the hallway outside of my home office. I reached the door and listened. No hooting. The door was still closed, and there was no window in that room. That meant that whatever was in there last night was still in my art studio. Clutching the bat, I swung open the door. It was empty. Nothing. I checked every square inch of the art studio, but the owner of those eyes seemingly vanished in the night. Or it had both opened and closed the door to the room. Whatever the case, there was no doubt now that was the thing making the noises. It also meant something is, or was, inside of my apartment. Whatever the case, I was almost late for work. I got ready in record time and raced to the studio. My first day working there went really well. In fact, I almost forgot about my situation at home until I was driving back to my apartment. The thought struck me as I was sitting at a stoplight. "I'll give it one more night," I thought. If the thing is still there, I'll call an exterminator. I climbed up the stairs and into the corridor outside the entrance to my apartment. I walked right up to the door leading into my house. I took a deep breath and opened my door. At first, nothing happened. I didn't hear or see anything out of the ordinary. I slowly tiptoed my way into my home. Carefully, I reached my hand over to the light switch. I was about to flick it on when something lunged at me. I recognized the red eyes from the previous night. I could also make out a strange black figure before everything went black. I awoke on the floor in my apartment. I could see that I was in my art studio. What was going on? Whatever that thing was had attacked me, knocked me down, and dragged me into my home office. I checked my watch. 8:15 p.m. I sat up. I had made up my mind now. I was calling an exterminator. I made an appointment for the following morning with Ben Fervor, an exterminator I found for a low price. Finally, the matter could be put to rest. I went to bed that night, making sure to check my whole room for any sign of that beast. Ben Fervor arrived the next morning at 7 o'clock sharp. He was an old man, most likely in his mid-70s. He sounded and smelled as if he had been smoking for 50 years. I couldn't wait for him to get this over with and to leave my house. We exchanged a few words, and I agreed that he could go into my apartment and do his thing while I waited outside. He walked in and closed the door behind him, which I found fairly strange, but I didn't think much about it. I just wanted that thing out. I waited outside of my apartment for 20 minutes. The entire time I could hear the sounds of rustling coming from the inside. At one point, I thought I could hear glass shattering. This was getting ridiculous. I would rather deal with it myself than have the exterminator destroy my whole house. I pulled open the door. Did you? Mr. Fervor was running down the hall. I saw something drop out of his hands before two long, nasty black hands gripped him from behind. It all happened so fast. I saw the creature with the red eyes thrust his needle-like arm into the exterminator's back from behind. His blood gushed out across the room. His screams ended abruptly. He was dead. I ran. I could hear the sounds of the beast echoing from behind me. I didn't stop until I was several blocks away and 100% sure that the thing was no longer behind me. I sat down on a bench and pondered the situation. That creature was living in my apartment. I had just witnessed it ingesting an entire human being, but somehow it hadn't killed me. I would have been easy meat. There were loads of times where that thing could have grabbed me without any resistance whatsoever. I decided to stay with my brother. I didn't fully explain to him why I was crashing at his place, but he let me stay. No questions asked. The entire night, I considered my choices. I could stay at my brother's place forever. I could move out, or I could face whatever that was. I chose to face it. I don't know why. I don't know if I was going insane, but whatever the case, I knew I had to face my fears. When I woke up in the morning, I said goodbye to my brother and walked back to my apartment. I walked down the hall into my room. I flung it open. My teeth were chattering. I held my breath. I was sweating heavily. I stepped inside. I heard the sound of scurrying deep in the darkness. I flung on the light. Everything was silent. "Who are you? What are you?" I shouted. I must have seemed like a complete madman to my neighbors, but I didn't care. I was unarmed. This was hopeless. I just wanted this nightmare to be over. Then, I saw it, fully. For the past couple nights, I'd just seen its eyes. Even the day before, the thing had been almost completely hidden behind the exterminator. But now, he was completely exposed.
I couldn't scream. I couldn't breathe. The thing inside my apartment was beyond comprehension. I had read the works of famous authors who have written about beasts that are impossible for humans to comprehend. I know that those stories were fictional, but this is not. My body refused to move. That creature, I don't think I could give a proper description of it. All I know is that the red eyes were definitely the same. I could feel my entire body shutting down. I was trembling all over. The monster picked me up. I didn't even react. I just let it. So this is where the noises were coming from. In a strange way, I felt contentment, knowing that I would die. I would end this nightmare. I felt peace. The creature turned around, taking me with it. It bent over and showed me the dead body of Ben Ferber, the exterminator, which was laying on the ground. Despite the fact that I was still in shock, I could still see that he was holding my wallet. In his pocket were other small objects of value. Laying on the ground next to him was a loaded pistol. My exterminator was trying to steal from me. A wave of realization tumbled into me like a freight train. The monster I had been living in fear of was protecting me. Mr. Ferber could have killed me had he not been killed himself. The beast itself had plenty of opportunities to attack and destroy me, but it didn't. The creature set me down. I could hear a dragging sound behind me. I passed out instantly. I woke up to my bed. My wallet and other belongings were next to me. I know what happened truly did transpire, as when I turned on my TV, I could see a news report documenting the death of Ben Ferber. Like I said, I've read stories about such monsters that are beyond human comprehension. I've also read that there are two ways to deal with the trauma. Either try to rationalize what you have seen, or go completely and utterly insane. I think for me, it's the latter. I've stopped eating and drinking myself. When I wake up in the morning, I'm always fed. But I think it's the creature keeping me alive, not me. I can't even summon up the strength to go to my art studio. I simply stay in bed all day, wallowing in my filth. I still hear the hooting every night at 11:15. I'm not scared anymore. I managed to type this all out on my laptop today, as a warning. I don't know if it's just happening to me, but if you hear an owl outside your house at 11:15, be warned. My name is Boston Murphy, and I kill werewolves for the U.S. government. I didn't join the army to get medals or to have a statue in my honor. I joined it to simply get away from my family. My father's okay, but his new wife is the most evil person you could have the misfortune of meeting. She used to constantly berate me, calling me less than dirt and a waste of space. I tried telling Dad, but he didn't believe it, or chose not to believe it. I joined the army when I was 17. It was the only way to get away from the verbal abuse. Stepmom couldn't be happier that I was finally out of her house, but Dad was crushed. He understood why I chose to do it, but he still felt like it was his fault. I was shipping out today, and he gave me an emotional send-off. It was time to start my own life. I arrived at Fort Bronson by Thursday. I still remember having goosebumps arriving. This was it. I was really doing this. No turning back now. Fort Bronson was a massive base, expanding over 60 acres. The bus stopped, and drill instructor Haymeyer walked on board, gracing us with his hospitality. "Attention, you piss cans. I'm Instructor Haymeyer. I'll be your friend for the next 18 weeks. Now get your sorry asses off my bus and get checked in." Do I make myself clear? Sir, yes, sir, we all shouted in unison. We got our bags and got off the bus. Since I was sitting in the very back, I was the last one to leave. Haymeyer looked at me and stopped me. What's your name, cadet? He asked. Boston Murphy, sir, I replied nervously. He looked me up and down, muttering to himself. You're not going with them. You're going to the special assignment ward, Haymeyer said. I haven't been here more than 10 minutes, and I'm already getting a special assignment. Where is that, sir? I asked. In your room next to the mess hall, in the north building. Now get the hell off my bus, Haymeyer replied. I quickly got my bags and left. The north building was the farthest building on the base, away from everyone else. The sun was furious that day, and I was sweating hard, yet I walked at a brisk pace. All I knew was that it could be the first test. I entered the building, the air conditioning inside greeting me like an old friend. The place was a maze of stairs and hallways. I had to use my map. The mess hall was located on the second hallway. I climbed the stairs, carrying my luggage with me. This building seemed less maintained than the other buildings, but who am I to judge? As I approached the mess hall, I turned to the door to the left. It looked like a janitor's closet. It had a faded special assignments sticker on it. I opened it, and a rush of old, musty air ambushed my nose. Once inside, I walked down a long hallway. There was no paint on the walls. It was gray. The fluorescent lights shined bitterly. Through a pair of double doors, I entered a waiting room. The place was empty. Only a receptionist and another cadet populated the place. I went to the receptionist. Name, please, she said. Boston Murphy, I replied. She checked her notes, sighing. I don't see you in my notes. You must be new. Yeah. Instructor Haymeyer sent me here, I said, sweating. She dialed a number on her phone, motioning me to take a seat. I did what she asked. The other cadet in the room was a skinhead called James. You're new here too, huh? He asked. Yeah, man, I replied. Me too. I was so ready to kick some jihadi ass, but I'm here instead. You feel me? He asked. Yeah, I lied. The truth was that I didn't join to kill. I was hoping to be a medic or something. My name's James. What's yours? He asked. Boston, I replied. You seem cool, Boston. Personally, I hope that was a mistake. I want to hit the range and make those bastards pay for 9/11, James said. Cadet James Fillmore, the receptionist said. I guess that's my cue. See you, brother, James said, patting my back. I waited to be called in, watching videos on my phone, the receptionist on the phone looking at me every so often, whispering. After what seemed like centuries, I was finally called up. The receptionist told me to go through the double doors and into the first door on the right. I walked through, luggage in hand. The hallway I walked in was small and dirty. The door on the right said, Lycanthropy Extermination with Greg Romero. Lycanthropy? Like as in werewolves? This had to be a joke. Surely Haymeyer played a prank on me, attesting how gullible new recruits are. I looked further down the hall. It only got weirder from there. Wendigo Extermination from Susan Fletcher. Thunderbird Extermination with Otto Haymeyer. Zombie Extermination with Tony Stevenson. I had half a mind to walk out and confront Haymeyer, but something told me that he didn't appreciate being called a liar. Despite my doubts, I walked in. Inside, it looked like a regular classroom, having desks and such. James was sitting in back while I sat near the front. Hey, Boston. Small world, am I right? He asked. I suppose, I replied. I sat down, and a man started speaking. Welcome, cadets. I'm Greg Romero, and for the next 18 weeks, I'll teach you how to dispatch a lycanthrope, Mr. Romero said. James raised his hand. Aren't werewolves fake, though? He asked. I wish they were fake, but no, they're not. Lycanthropy poses a serious threat to livestock and humanity as a whole, Mr. Romero replied. I raised my hand.
Where's the rest of the class? I asked. Romero sighed. We're not as popular as Wendigo Extermination, but hopefully we'll receive more recruits next year. Romero showed a photo of a mutilated woman being eaten alive by a werewolf. I gagged. We have thankless jobs, gentlemen. Only two people know we exist, and that's the two of you. Who wants to kill a wolf? Romero asked. We both shouted in unison. For the next 18 weeks, I was taught how to kill a wolf. Silver does kill one, but instead of a crossbow, I got a mini 14 with silver bullets. I was trained how to track wolves and how to survive in the wild. It was hard at first, but I got the hang of it. On graduation day, I was so happy. James and I got drunk at his place. At first, I didn't like James, but during training, we became friends. I was deployed to Arizona, of all places. The assignment was simple. An elderly lycanthrope was spotted in the area, and I had to dispatch him. I had to cut off its right hand as proof and return it to my bosses. I was getting paid $100,000 for this. Since I was new, this assignment was sort of a test to see if I had what it takes. I arrived at Ground Zero, a campsite. The brass in Washington were nice enough to close its surrounding area so nobody could get hurt. I looked for clues, only to find a patch of hair. It smelled like piss, meaning that a wolf was nearby. The hair led deep into the brush, into the desert. The sun was angry that day. It cooked my skin under all my armor. It led to an abandoned farmhouse, but any sign of a farm was dried up a long time ago. I crept to a window, rifle in hand. I peeked, and not only did I see the wolf, but there were also two little wolves, seemingly surrounding him.
"Come on, Grandpa. Let's go play,"
one of the little ones said, nibbling on the big one's ear.
"In a while, I have to rest,"
he replied. My hands were shaking. Sweat dripped from my brow. I had to do this. I was getting paid to. I took a deep breath, and then I kicked the door open. I opened fire, shooting the big one in the chest four times, sending him backwards. The kids looked on in horror, screaming and crying. I brought out my axe and hacked off his right hand. I placed it in my bag, and the puppy started crying. "Shut your fucking mouths," I yelled, pointing my rifle at them. They only screamed louder. I panicked. I didn't want to fail my first mission. I did what I had to do. I shot the puppies, hitting them both in the head. I hacked off their right hands, putting them in my bag. Once the adrenaline died, I threw up. What's done is done. I can't fix it. I had $300,000 in my bag, softening the blow. I returned to my boss and gave them the hands. They were surprised, to say the least.
"Damn. Not only did you take out that old fuck, but you popped his grandkids, too. You're the best exterminator we've ever had, but no mercy. I'm gonna call you Isoner from now on, okay?" my boss said, signing me a check. It was from the United States Treasury. $300,000. I placed the money in my bank account when I got home. Before I left, my boss said, "Your new assignment is to dispatch wolf pups spotted in Alaska. But I don't think that'll be a problem for you, Isonerve." He winked. It made me sick. I reloaded my silver ammo, bought some beef jerky, and flew to Alaska. A logger found a wolf pup hanging out around the woods near his house and locked it in his shed. I told him to stay back in case I got aggressive. I went in, closing the door behind me. Huddled in the corner, I saw four wolf pups. They looked scared. I wasn't proud of what happened next. I fired, and I took their hands. I returned to my boss and turned in the hands. He gave me $400,000 this time.
"Isonerve, you're making your country safer every time you go out. You're a hero, son," he said.
"I don't feel like a hero, sir," I replied. "Just know this. They're monsters. They don't know right from wrong. All they know is killing. Take 2 months off, then come back, okay? He said, sending me off. That's all the time I have today. I'll get back to you as soon as I can.